Now, come on, Leo. You forgot the big announcement.
What big announcement?
It's the start of our third year.
Oh, see, nobody typed it in there for me, so I didn't read it. But it's the start of our third year.
Yay!
Welcome to Mintcast, podcast by the Linux Mint community for all users of Linux. This is episode 347.5. Livestream information is at mintcast.org/livestream. We're in the Mintcast channel in IRC at irc.spotchat.org. If you see something you'd like to hear about, tell us. Send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. Join us live on YouTube. Post at the Mintcast subreddit. Chat with us on Telegram, Discord, Facebook, or post directly at mintcast.org. This is Leo, and with me today is Bo.
We nearly started on time today.
Almost. Joe.
You have to call this the Fullcast Mintcast.
Tony Hughes.
Hi, guys.
Moss.
No teeth, but I'm here.
Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
And Tony Watts.
Hello, hello.
We're recording on Sunday, November 1st. First up, in our innards section, we cover our experiences with the flavors of Ubuntu 2010. And finally, the feedback and a couple suggestions. Ubuntu 2010. Here we are. We've been giving Ubuntu 2010s a good spin around the block. So looks like, Joe, you've got something up here at the top. Tell me what you thought. Ubuntu 2010. Looks like you did proper. Ooh, wait a minute. You don't like GNOME either.
I didn't like old GNOME. It has gotten better, I will say that. And this is on the Pi. And really, that's what's available stock. And I didn't want to do too much switching around unless I had a lot of problems with GNOME. I just ran it the way it was. Super easy to install. I used RPI Imager instead of Etcher. Very quick, very easy. I didn't even have to go and find the download. It did it all for me. It took a couple of tries after I got the image burned and put onto the Pi to get the screen to come up on the monitor that I was using. But after that, it was very much a standard install of Ubuntu. And I think most of my complaints are with the Pi in this instance, as opposed to Ubuntu 2010. Post the initial setup, you know, going through that very standard setup, this is my country, this is my time zone, all of that. I tried to install some of my standard applications, and some of it worked. X2Go worked very easy. You couldn't get Chrome because it's ARM, and there is no ARM version of Chrome, I guess, but Chromium worked fine, and the Firefox version worked fine, but it still had the issues where Netflix doesn't work stock. But I'll get to that in a second. I also installed Audacity and Mumble, which are two of my standard installs. They installed very well. They worked very easily. Multitasking definitely was not too much of a problem.
Hey, now, did you pay attention to how you installed this? Was it Snap or Deb?
It was just apt install.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I did it terminal-wise. I got you.
Yeah. And then I was able to install a Docker version. It wasn't my normal method for installing it. This was the Docker IO. So it was sudo apt install Docker IO. And then you had to do some extra things to get it working correctly. I followed a tutorial that I found because the old Chromium Media Edition that I used to use on the Pi to get Netflix and Prime Video working did not work at all. But the Docker version of Chromium, it worked with Netflix. And video played very smooth and the sound was great. Not in the first few minutes, but if you let it play for more than like 2-3 minutes, then it smoothed out. There was some dropped frames in the first couple of minutes, I guess while it was buffering or whatever. But yeah, after that, the choppiness went away. Very smooth experience and it looked great. I do have to say it's not the smoothest OS that I've seen on the Pi, but it is able to do multitasking fairly well. I am familiar with GNOME from the time that I was using Fedora And it works. It looked very, very familiar, and I enjoyed it. Very standard Linux, but at least on the Pi version, it has the issue where it locks the screen at whatever time you set, even when video is playing. So I did have to set it to not lock on its own, but I'm not quite sure if that's because I was using the Docker version of Chromium. So maybe with a standard version of Chromium, if you're watching a YouTube video or something, it works just fine. I wouldn't want to use it long term as a desktop, but it would work as a secondary or backup machine for me. I was able to do daily tasks with it, and browsing and video watching was smooth. I have seen a couple of reviews on the Pi with Ubuntu 2010 where they were saying that YouTube didn't play very well. Now, I did get some the occasional stagger or stutter with video on YouTube, and it did seem to be locked in at 480p, but it wasn't anything overly terrible, and it sounded good, and despite being 480p, it looked decent on that little 17-inch monitor that I was using.
Joe, just to clarify, I take it you're talking about a Pi 4
here. Yeah, Pi 4, 4 gig.
What have you got as far as RAM goes? Because they're saying minimum 4 gig, aren't they?
Yeah, it was, when I ran it on mine, it was about a gig, 1.1 gigs after boot.
Yeah. The total RAM on it, I was using the 4 gigabyte version. GNOME did not seem to be too much of a resource hog, which has been my issue with it in the past.
Surprising.
Right? And that's kind of my review on that.
I have a question, Joe. Why did you try? I'm glad someone tried main Ubuntu, even if it was on the Pi. But for the Pi, wouldn't the better choice be Ubuntu Mate? Martin's done tons more work with the Pi.
I'm not even sure if he's got the Pi 4 out yet for Ubuntu Mate.
Well, I've got a little bit on this. I did Ubuntu Mate on 2004 on the Pi, and that worked pretty well. But I could not get my audio gear to play nice with it when I had. I think it was when I opened up Mumble and Audacity at the same time, they were fighting for the microphone instead of both using it like I'm using right now, just like I'm using right now. So that was kind of an issue for me. It's what got me to just put something else on it. But I did also use Ubuntu 2010 proper on the Raspberry Pi, which, I'm just going to back Joe up on pretty much everything he said. It was good. Do not expect 60 frame per second animations on GNOME. It's just not going to happen. GNOME is pretty graphically heavy, and not even my laptop with an i3-5300 can keep up with GNOME.
It's going to be interesting. They discussed this on the Ubuntu podcast last week, and it's going to be interesting over the next couple of point releases how much development they do on it ready for the next long-term support in 2204, and whether the reason they waited until 2010 was to make, to say it is a development release really for the Raspberry Pi 4, and by the time we get to 2204, it's going to be a lot slicker. And so if you've got the 8 gig version of the Raspberry Pi 4, then maybe by the time they get to 2204, we may find it's a really, really slick release.
So I really do hope that it's going to be. I think GNOME 40 will probably have more performance tweaks in it, but I don't know that it's going to be enough for the Pi to be able to run. But this is not really kind of a knock against the Pi or even a knock against Ubuntu. I just think the Pi can't handle it, GNOME in general. And what I think should be done on that, just turn off animations. On the Pi version, you should just turn off animations, and you would not notice these kinds of slowdown things. I think if you're paying a lot of attention to it, you'll notice. But if you just turned them off, you wouldn't.
Yeah, not being a GNOME user, I wouldn't know about that.
My Pi 4 running the 2004 beta of Mate, I never updated it because I was having just too much problems with the USB ports fighting each other. So I had a USB sound card, or I couldn't get enough sound on my speakers. And then my USB keyboard, wireless keyboard, just nope. They every time I had to unplug one to start it, and it just wasn't, it was supposed to be automatic TV process. And it's just not automatic if you have to keep getting up and restoring one USB device.
Well, this may have actually been kind of what I was running into with 2004 Mate. I mean, when 2010 Mate is out, I would say upgrade to it and see if you see any relief in any of that. Because once I plugged everything in on my Pi for 2010, everything worked. It to be honest with you, if I didn't know I was running on a Pi outside of the slowness, I wouldn't have been able to tell any difference.
Yeah, I didn't try it because I know that it's sometimes an issue with the Pi. If you start hooking up multiple audio output devices, it starts having a really hard time keeping track of where the audio is supposed to be going. So this time, I...
Okay, only one audio device that it was conflicting with my other USB device.
You were using a USB sound card. Now, that means that there was three audio output devices on there. There's the 3.5 millimeter, there's the HDMI out, and then there was your USB out.
Yeah, but I mean, but on 2010...
Okay, well, I wasn't getting audio out the HDMI.
Well, but it's in the list, I think, is what he's getting at. Yeah, I mean, I just didn't have... Yeah, I just did not have any issues in 2010 audio-wise. So, yeah, like I said, when Mate 2010 comes out, if it's not already out, I would say upgrade to it. Yeah.
Look forward to it.
It looks like it is. The version that's out for the Pi says compatible with B3, 3 Plus, and B4.
Heck yeah, go do it. Go do it now. GNOME Proper was good. I've used Ubuntu every release. Actually, except this one, other than on the Pi. I don't know what else would have changed, to be honest. A little bit of GNOME performance, some updates. So this go around, I decided to go with Kubuntu. And man, every single time I get on Plasma Desktop, I fall in love all over again. I don't know why that is. I mean, blur and terminal transparency and all of that, I mean, that helps. Man, that stuff looks good. Just Plasma in general looks so good. And every time I install it, it's harder and harder to replace it with something. I mean, 9 times out of 10, I'm always going back to Linux Mint, but man, it's hard. Some of the things that you can do in it, just so much information is available in Plasma, so much configuration. And, you know, this is a big turnoff for a lot of people. I totally get that. But I mean, the fact that you can just go grab a global theme, click it, and just be done. You don't have to go further than that. You don't have to go in and tweak things. But you totally can. And that seriously just makes it so easy and so nice. There are a couple of big downsides. There's really just one big downside to running Kubuntu 2010. And that is, it's on 5.19. KDE had just put out a 5.20 release that was huge. Lots of default changes and just lots of things are better in general. And folks on Kubuntu 2010, you're just not going to get that. You're going to have to wait 6 more months for Kubuntu 2004 to come out for you to see that. The only other real way to get Plasma on an Ubuntu base is to do KDE Neon. And well, that's not as good. Well, I don't know. There's real drawbacks to that as well, because KDE Neon is based on 2004. So you're going to have an older kernel and older this and older that, and all of the hardware enablement stuff is not available yet from 2010. The kernel is available, so you can install 5.8 if that's what you need, but the Xorg stack and everything else, that's not quite available from Ubuntu just yet. So this is one of the things that you're going to have to pay attention to with Kubuntu. So if you can stomach 5.19, I don't know why you wouldn't be able to. It's pretty fantastic. You can go with 20.10, but if not, you might, I don't know, give KDE Neon a spin, because it's got 5.20 already, so you can see all the 5.20 goodness. I've run them both. It's fine. To be honest with you, I don't know that you'll notice a lot of the differences between the two. But yeah, man, it's Plasma. It is so slick and so smooth. And Latte Dock. Ooh. I had to put Latte Dock on. Bo, I know we've talked about Plank and Latte Dock a lot, just kind of in general. And you couldn't get on with Latte, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always use Plank. But I don't know that I've.
Oh, okay.
I think I've tried. I don't think I have any problem with latte. I think I just.
Yeah, and I mean it's super simple.
The go-to. That's the easiest
just
one for
like
me.
Plasma Latte Dock has about 7,455 features on it, so you get lost. They have an advanced toggle, and if your eyes weren't bulging out of your head in the first place, yeah, it certainly was after you hit that toggle on. But anyway, kernel 5.8. I think that was the biggest thing for me. Because on my desktop, I need it for my video card, and on this machine, I don't really notice any difference between 5.4 and 5.8, but the fact that I have, you know, the newest stuff is kind of nice. The performance is great. It's absolutely great. And one of the things that I have to say about Plasma is that it is more performant than GNOME. Just hands down. Hands down. I mean, yeah, it uses less memory on startup, but I mean, I don't know. If you're hurting over 512 megabytes of RAM, then you know Plasma is definitely going to help you in that case. But I think a lot of folks are running on 8 and 16 gigs of RAM now. I know not everybody is, and quite possibly the majority of people may not be. But I know the folks that go into places like Biddle certainly are. But yeah, it's so performant. And I'd mentioned before on my laptop that it can't handle GNOME. It cannot do it. You will, after about 10 minutes, just notice that the animations get chunky. Even Linux Mint Cinnamon suffers from this. You will see it get chunky after a little bit. So, yeah, that laptop that runs GNOME and Cinnamon a little bit chunky after a while, Plasma never slows down. Not ever. And that, I think, is a testament to how good the Qt libraries are and just how far Plasma has come since version 4. I don't know about you guys, but version 4 was horrible. Once they hit version 5 and started getting some of those point releases, oh man, they just hit their stride. And 5.20 now is just, it's so nice. So, so nice. So, Bo, you had some thoughts on, ooh, the Unity flavor. What?
Oh, yeah. So, I think Moss and I both tried out the Ubuntu Unity remix. And I really enjoyed it. Like I think it could be something I could use if I was able to resolve this issue that I described during my biweekly wanderings, as far as running Proton games. If I could resolve that issue, I'd stay on it. It's funny because whenever Unity first came out, I couldn't stand it, and I didn't like the change, and so you know, that was one of the first moments that I fled away from Ubuntu and tried out other things. And then even whenever they switched from Unity to GNOME, I had kind of gone back and revisited and decided, Unity's not as bad as I thought it was. But it still didn't grow on me. But then this time around doing this test, and I specifically wanted to do this one because I was curious how I would feel about Unity today compared to back then. And I definitely don't hate it. I really like the HUD like launcher thing. I like how it searches my files as well as applications. So like if I'm just typing in the name of something, whether it's a file or an application, it comes up in that search. I don't know. I don't mind the layout of it. I think that I kind of was too hasty in the beginning. Whenever I decided, you know, just immediately that I didn't like the change. Yep. And I didn't want to go with it. So, you know, maybe that was a little too quick to judge, or maybe it's gotten better. Maybe it's gotten better as it got maintained, because I mean, if you think about it, Unity went from like not existing to being the most popular desktop environment in Linux overnight. Like as soon as Ubuntu said, okay, this is going to be our main desktop environment, it immediately became the most popular thing, and it was basically being developed at that moment. And so it's probably gotten better over its history with Ubuntu. It probably got better over that time. And I didn't see all those changes incrementally because I jumped ship. But I think it's actually pretty decent. It's kind of grown on me. I could get used to it. There's one minor gripe that I have about it, and it is pretty minor. I could definitely live with it, but I remember window dodging being a feature when it was a part of Ubuntu Official. Now you just have auto hide. There's no window dodge. So you either have it always showing, or it always hides unless you move your mouse over there, but there's no like IntelliHide where it shows whenever there's no windows open, but when you open a window, it hides. That feature is not present currently in Unity.
Yeah, I would point out that Unity 7 is no longer in development. The community has moved on to Unity 8 and renamed that Lumiri. Ubuntu Unity still uses Unity 7, but they have an experimental Lumiri edition. However, Lumiri is not ready for the desktop.
Lumiri is primarily for the phone, right? So there's going to have to be some porting and backporting and moving and shaking just to make it work.
So right now, nobody is supporting Unity 7.
So Unity 7, oh, that is interesting. So there's no version of Unity for the desktop currently, other than Unity 7, but there's not like a, because I thought there was a newer version of Unity.
There is Unity
7.
8 and it's Lumiri, but it is not feature complete yet. I will point out that we don't have to be jealous that a 10-year-old boy came up with this distro because he's 11 now.
Honestly, that's probably part of the reason why it may be easier to deal with Ubuntu Unity, because you don't have desktop environment changes. You don't have to worry too terribly much about that stuff. So all you have to do is just make sure that it's compatible with the bits and bobs that Ubuntu is pushing down through its repositories in the new versions of Ubuntu. So, 2010 was basically just, all right, slap it on, test it. Does it work? All right, cool, push it out. I know it's not that easy, but I imagine there are...
Yeah.
Ubuntu Unity might be on par with XFCE because that desktop never gets updates.
I feel like Ubuntu Unity felt way more modern.
Oh,
than
good
XFCE.
Lord! Yes,
I know that whenever I criticize XFCEs, we always get messages from people that love it, and I was in that camp for a long time. I used to love XFCE, and I still think it's great. It serves a certain purpose, but I could get used to Unity 7. I think that I would want something ultimately a little more customizable. I think whatever I use on a daily basis, I want to feel like I've got more control over than what I felt like I had in Unity, but, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't as bad. I think I'm representative of some percentage of the community. And I think that I can say for myself personally that I was way too quick to judge. Unity probably was not as bad as we made it out to be when it first came out.
I think
out.
A lot of people's aversion to it in the first place was just the fact that they just don't like change, right? I mean, you went from GNOME 2 to something that was starkly not. Yeah.
Dramatically.
It was not GNOME 2.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And, when they made the GNOME 3 switch, I think it was a lot easier to deal with because they tried to at least make it look and feel like, and it still does. It still kind of feels like Unity in a lot of ways.
Well, when Unity hit 12.04, I always only did LTSs, and it would not load onto my computer. The hardware that I had would not run Unity, and I could not figure out how to do any of the workarounds to get a different desktop on it. And that's what forced me back over to Windows 7 for a while, and then I came back with Linux Mint later.
Moss alluded to the developer of this remix of Ubuntu was born the year Unity came out.
Oh,
he's
good
only
Lord.
11 years old.
Oh,
that's,
no.
That is wild.
I'm so old.
That's wild. I wish that we had put his name in the show notes, but I didn't think about it. I'll do it after the fact. But that's a pretty cool thing. He's going to grow up to be some sort of genius. Maybe he's not a genius now.
All right. So more Unity, Moss? Did you already say your bits?
Okay. I had my mic muted. I was trying to start again. I've been running 2004 all along, so I installed this. It would not install the NVIDIA driver, the same driver which installed perfectly in 1804 and 2004. I think we've identified this as a kernel 5.8 issue, and I'll talk a bit more about this in the next section. But yeah, Rudra Sarasvada is a hell of a good kid, and he's fun to talk to, and he's very mature and everything. Get into the Ubuntu Unity Telegram group, and you'll have lots of fun.
Well, I also wanted to point out that I was following along in the Distro Hoppers chat, and this kid straight up offered you web space for free to host the podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Oh, wow.
Well, it helps that I have donated to the Ubuntu Unity project, so maybe that gave me a little, but still,
it didn't sound like, oh, well, for the next 6 months, I'll let you borrow our storage or anything like that. It was just like, no, host the show on our servers. Like, that was so cool. I thought that was awesome.
That's really awesome. Your NVIDIA problem, I have an NVIDIA card and I did not have the problem. So I wonder if it has something to do with our model cards.
Well, I'm running the NVIDIA 340.108. And it's the same driver. It hasn't even changed version numbers to the 108 standard.
And see, mine would be 440. I think I'm on 445.
I've got an older card. Yeah. It's an FX 1800.
It's probably related to that, then, is what I would guess. Your card probably requires a certain version, and that version's having trouble. But the reason why me and Joe didn't experience is because we are using the 400 something series of drivers.
Yeah. Well, Bodhi is still running the 4.15 kernel, and when I installed Bodhi, it not only noticed the driver, it installed it as part of installation. I didn't have to install it in post-installation. It was already there, put in. Linux Mint 20 and Ubuntu Unity 20.04, it didn't install it, but it was there to install, and it went in smooth as butter. But this one, it just says, nope, can't do it.
Boo.
Anyhow, let's move along.
Yeah, we're so I wanted to do a little bit of note switcheroo in Tony Hughes's favor. What do we say we talk about Ubuntu Studio next? Tony Watts, you up for that?
Groovy. All yeah, right. I just have a couple quick comments on Ubuntu Studio. Their implementation of the Ubiquiti installer, I thought, looked pretty slick. It fit in with their scheme really well. Once I got it installed, the menus are, I think, the main difference in what I'll stick to commenting on. The menus using KDE look way more modern than the implementation of XFCE. No surprise there. To me, the biggest change, and we talked about this the last show I was on, which was a couple episodes ago, but Ubuntu Studio for me is, I enjoy it as a way to browse what the best applications are for certain types of creation. And I think this is a big improvement in the menus. The way that this used to work, if you navigated to your sound apps, for example, you had to hover over what you were looking at to get a description would pop out. And, you know, you could see this is a, you know, drum sample app. This is a multi-track recorder, whatever, whatever. So they've changed that, and there are brief descriptions that you can just kind of see right there next to the application choices, which I think is great. For me, for the things I use all the time, I'll just hit super key and, you know, start typing the app I need and go straight to it. I don't really use menus very much for the applications I use day to day, but, you know, for just browsing and seeing what you might want to try out, I think this is really awesome.
Yeah, and it comes with all of the cool Plasma updates that you get in Kubuntu as well. So, I mean, the low initial memory usage that, I mean, Now, I had mentioned something about, you know, if you're hurting for 512 megs, about GNOME, this is one of those things where it would actually help you, because a lot of times these audio and video and whatever editors, I mean, they will chew up RAM. So an extra 512 megs may actually be the difference between crashing and not crashing. So definitely something to look into because of the Plasma switch.
Yeah, and I read somewhere that the difference in RAM usage between XFCE and Plasma was something like 50 megabytes. So, I mean, it's really pretty negligible.
Yep.
And certainly when I tried it out, it felt very snappy.
Yeah, and the fact that everything is Qt-based in the first place, well, not everything, but most of those things are Qt-based in the first place, I mean, that's just another thumbs up for Plasma.
Well, I've got a quick little anti-negative about this. I downloaded it and tried it, but it seems to want to be XFCE. I could not get the panel to move to the bottom. Some things you just don't have to live with.
No, you can get the panel to move to the bottom. It's just
I worked really hard. I did.
Yeah, you can get the panel to move it to the bottom. It's the first thing I did, but unless you've done it before, it's not dead obvious how you do it.
Yeah, it ain't cinnamon.
it's one of those little...
Well, I've played with KDE a lot, and it usually comes with a panel on the bottom or
the
top.
Yeah, I know.
And I just couldn't get it to do that.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I'll just add the studio tools to another flavor, or maybe even Mint. let's go on to Tony.
Yeah, so as I said earlier on, I've not been feeling too well recently, so I only got around to installing this onto my X230i last night. So I've not really had a lot of time to play around with it. First problem was it wouldn't connect to my Wi-Fi, but I found out later that it connects to the Wi-Fi fine in all the other rooms in my house, but my studio. So it's obviously a hardware issue. It's either the signal for that particular laptop, which is an older one. It's probably not got a card with a strong enough aerial in it to pick up the Wi-Fi in this room. So, because there's no other issues on any of my other machines. We've already been talking about how user-friendly it is with RAM, and I did a quick look, and it took up about 620 meg on first boot, and even with Firefox open with three tabs, it was only taking 1.5 gig. So, yeah, it is really good on resources. Didn't try it with any heavy kind of programs running. Like I say, I've not installed it long enough to do that. It is because of the fact that it is fully flavored with virtually every, you know, program you need for creating anything. It takes up, after I added a couple of little programs, I put Mumble on it and I put VirtualBox on it. It was taking up 13 gig of hard drive space. So in a virtual machine, you'd need at least a 16 gig hard drive. And if you wanted to do a hard install onto a USB flash drive, then I suggest a 32 gig flash drive to give you a bit of space for storage after you've done the install. There was a few little annoyances with Plasma for me, but like I say, as an OS aimed at creators, I'd recommend giving it a go. Like I say, it's got virtually every piece of software known to man for creation. It even has Blender pre-installed. And as Leo said last night, who uses Blender, who's a normal user? But this is definitely geared up to the creation, you know, creative users. And that's why they created it in the first place. I'd say, just on my first initial look, I'd say, yeah, it's really slick. And I agree with Tony, you know, the menu and everything is really, really slick and very modern. And I really like that.
Yeah, I'll back up Moss on this one. To be honest with you, I just think that there's too much in Ubuntu Studio. Like, if you're going in there as an audio editor or, a you know, just it's some kind of production of audio, and you're really just looking for the audio tools and jack and things like that. If you're video, then obviously video. And if you're doing 3D modeling, then Blender. All of these things are available in the other distributions as well. So my opinion is I would install Kubuntu, and in the Ubuntu Studio tools for jack and all the other bits, and the low latency kernel and all that, and then just install the software that I actually use. I'm very picky about the software that's on my machine. So, like, I'll go in there and like, remove Evolution. Like, I'm not trying to, I don't need that. I don't need an email client. So, yeah, just Ubuntu Studio would be such a tedious backwards walk. So much of it would be that, yeah, I'll just stick with Kubuntu and work that way.
Yeah, but given it was still only taking up 13 gig of a hard drive.
It's not really the space that...
Even after I added a couple of extra things, if you think that a serious creator who's probably going to run this... He's going to be running a beefy machine, probably with a 1 terabyte SSD at least, and then loads and loads of external drives for backing up their, you know, creations. Then, you know, the extra software really isn't going to be an annoyance because you won't notice it on a really beefy machine at all.
No, it's not really the storage size for me. It's that I will peruse the menus every now and then, and the amount of scrolling you got to do, man.
You just get in the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a personal preference thing. It's not really a performance
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens to be exactly the thing I like about it. But yeah, it's just personal preference. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, for discovery, Tony Watts, I think you've even mentioned this before. Like, for discovery, having it all installed in there in the first place is fantastic because you could just stumble across something that'll just change your life. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was one of the things when I really first started using Linux. I didn't know what program to use for what. And yeah, for that, it was fantastic. I really, you know, learned about Linux software on Ubuntu Studio. And then, you know, from there, knew what to use for different things. But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, let's come back around to you again, Tony, and tell me about your Ubuntu Mate experience.
Yeah, so just a couple of quick notes, and I used to use Mate as my, you know, my mainstay before coming onto this show and using Mint full time. So pretty comfortable with Mate, but Couple quick notes to circle back to what we were talking about with the Raspberry Pi. The 2010 build is available for Raspberry Pi, and although we haven't had hands-on yet, I would think that it would be pretty usable.
Yeah.
If only there were an upcoming episode where we could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I did I did look out on the Mate website, and it is there. It's just not on the main Ubuntu.com. And I didn't Ubuntu.com used to have all the different flavors available where you could download them?
They've got a link at the bottom saying you can go check out the flavors here, but they I don't know that they hosted them there or linked to them there. Maybe just like a link to a link that had the links.
But the testing I did, it wasn't on a Pi, but it was on a very low-powered machine. My 7130 is i3 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, you know, old machine, so and a tablet at that. So it's not beefy, but Mate was really cruising along on that just fine. When you first get in, the Mate welcome, hadn't seen that for a while. It got a refresh in 2004 and looks a little nicer. You know, once I got in there, the software boutique, speaking of performance, that's another thing that I have noticed, that the software stores on a lot of distros, if you're on a low powered machine, they really take a minute to initialize. But the Mate software boutique is, I think, is fantastic. It just came up right away, was very snappy. I like the fact, and this is probably a bit of a divisive point, I would guess, but I like the fact for new users anyway that they include things like Chrome and Skype that people are familiar with that you don't find in the software stores on other distros. Yeah,
you know what? But, they have a Redmond theme, so make it look like Windows, and then you could just install Skype, and then the development version of Microsoft Edge, and then you can get Microsoft Teams, and then you can grab VS Code, and
and you will have a complete abomination.
Well, that's probably a good segue into just the last thing I wanted to say there. The Mate Tweak tool has been around for a while, but they did solve some bugs in 2010. So what you should be able to do now is if you're using the Redmond theme and you get it just like you want it, and then you decide, hey, this is like Windows and I don't like that, and move on to something else. Whatever you changed and tweaked for yourself, you should be able to switch right back to that. It'll save the user preferences from your desired panel layouts. At least I gathered that was the fix. And I did play around with the tweak tool a little bit. And I really like the Cupertino one, the one that's supposed to imitate Mac.
I always go with that one.
Yeah, it's really nice. It, you know, gives you Plank and just right out of the box, I think that configuration is kind of nice, although I don't use a dock now. Occasionally I change my mind about what I like and go with a setup that's pretty close to that. But yeah, Mate Tweak Tool, really amazing.
Yeah, I tried Mate after the failure I had with getting my NVIDIA driver loaded for Unity for the primary purpose of seeing if the driver loaded. And I had the same issue, so I did not go any farther with it. But as I said, it's probably a kernel issue, not a 2010 issue.
Nice. Well, just a quick little entry on Lubuntu. It has got to be my favorite VM GUI. If I have to install a GUI on a machine that I'm running a VM on or something like that, then it's going to be Lubuntu, man. It is the lightest weight one. It is the quickest to boot. There are no bells and whistles, man. I think they took out the bell and they took out the one whistle, and that's what they give you. But you know, in a situation like that, I think that's exactly what you need. You just need to launch. I mean, if you're running a GUI, you obviously have GUI apps you need to run. All of the resources are not bundled up with Lubuntu. All those resources are dedicated to whatever GUI app you actually need to run. So it's fantastic. It's nice, it's fast, and it doesn't use up a whole lot of RAM, especially on a VM. That is perfect. It looks like Moss added a note to our Zubuntu. Nobody did it. Nobody.
It doesn't change.
Oh my gosh, man. Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't. It's 4.14. So, I mean, everything that we would have said about the Zubuntu desktop, you know, that is Ubuntu stuff with Stan, not talking about the Ubuntu stuff, just XFCE, It's the same exact review that we would have given to 2004. So we didn't, we didn't dive in. So we definitely talk about Ubuntu Studio. So, okay, chillin'. I'm glad someone actually tried it. I tried it back in 2004. It was pretty fantastic, man. It gave me Windows vibes, like real strong Windows vibes. Is that what you got?
Oh, yeah. And I really just wanted to at least boot up the startup USB because I never had before. So that's all I really did. I didn't go through the install process, but I played around with the live USB, and it was interesting. Definitely really strong Windows vibes. I can see where coming from Windows, you may be at home. If you choose the English language options, you're still going to have some Chinese language hanging around, which absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, I totally noticed that in 2004 as well, but hopefully it's getting better.
Yeah, it wasn't anything that bothered me. I felt like I could have used it. It didn't seem like there was a lot of, one thing you would like about it, Leo, it didn't seem like there was a lot of extra bloat, not a lot of programs that you don't need. It seemed pretty lean. But it was interesting to browse the Chillin store because the market is going to be a little different regionally and the programs that people want are going to be different. So I found it interesting to just kind of poke around in the different categories and see what was offered.
Nice. Very cool. So Josh tried out a couple of them for us, and Ubuntu Cinnamon was on that list. So Josh, this is Linux Mint's doppelganger. How did it fare?
It was good. There's nothing inherently wrong with it that you can't use it or anything like that. It's just Ubuntu with Cinnamon on it, really. I mean, that's just it. I mean, I installed 2004 and I upgraded it to 2010 and I had no issues at all with that. I was expecting maybe something because it's just the remix. I didn't know, I don't really follow the non-official Ubuntu stuff that much other than Mint. So I didn't know if he was going to have a really good upgrade path. Now, I didn't have anything really installed on 2004 version of it. So maybe that helped out with not having any issues going forward.
It always does, yeah.
Yeah, so that could be one of the reasons why it worked. Not saying that it's not good, but it's Cinnamon. It's, whatever you get in Mint, as far as Cinnamon goes, is basically what you get in Ubuntu Cinnamon. I mean, the only difference is the applications that are installed. There are way more applications that are useful on Linux Mint than there is Ubuntu Cinnamon, I think. The only thing that I would change is I like that they have HTOP on Ubuntu Cinnamon and they don't install that by default on Mint, which I do like. I like that application for just a quick view of everything. The RAM usage was about the same as Linux Mint, around a gig or so, 980, depending on, if you had anything running in your taskbar or anything. But it's basically Ubuntu's version of Cinnamon, really.
Yeah, I think one of the really good things about, if you were to use Ubuntu Cinnamon in general, one of the things that you're going to get with it that you are not going to get with Mint is the updated software. Cinnamon, right. Cinnamon 2010 is sitting on much newer software. I mean, 4 or 5 months of software updates that you're just not going to get with Linux Mint unless you go with Flatpak or something like that. Linux Mint is based on 2004. So if you just have to have new packages but just can't do without Cinnamon, I mean, this is actually a pretty good remix to settle yourself on. Give it a test.
If you like brown and orange.
Yeah, the theming is not what I like. I definitely like Linux Mint's theming much better, even though I do change Linux Mint's theming a little bit. But the orange is, it really hits you. I mean, if you like orange and black and browns and that kind of stuff, you're good. You're solid with that one. But otherwise, it's a little crazy.
Well, if you think about it, that is a cinnamon
color. This is
true.
Actually, yeah. That's very true. I never thought about that. Yeah, I mean, that's... Really, that's the only downside, unless you like snaps. I mean, if you don't like snaps, then, you're going to get that along with this versus Mint. You're not going to get snaps. I did have an issue with the snap store specifically. It had like this weird transparency to it on both Cinnamon and Budgie, the ones that I did. And I found out that it was something to do with KVM's virtualization, because I tried these both in a virtual machine. I went to VMware, and it actually worked properly. So it had something to do with the driver. With that, yeah. I tried figuring it out, but it was too much for the time I had. So yeah, that's pretty much Ubuntu Cinnamon. I mean, it's Ubuntu with cinnamon.
So what about Budgie? You played around with Budgie as well.
Yep, and Budgie, I have a love-hate relationship with Budgie in general. I used to be a Solus user too. Like, I for like 2018, I used Solus just straight up the whole year. I don't think I used anything else as my daily driver. And I love Budgie on there. They have the best theming of any Linux distro, hands down, for all of their versions, their GNOME and all that. But anyway, this is not Solus review. And I tried Budgie on my Mac probably a little while ago, and I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. There was things that were wrong with it. The fans would not work even when I tried to get that right. So I wanted to try it again, even though it was in a virtual machine. And just like Cinnamon, the upgrade went well. Nothing went wrong. But like I said, I didn't have anything installed, so that's probably why it went so well. The Budgie desktop is just about one of the simplest and best looking desktops that you can get on any Linux distro, I think. It's just, they don't have a lot to it, and it just keeps it easy to use. It's a little more than GNOME, and a lot less than KDE. But it's a little less than Cinnamon as well for customizability, I think. I haven't really delved into that too much. Yeah, the welcome screen, that is one thing that they really nail on Budgie. I mean, they have everything that you need to do in Budgie is on the welcome screen. There's like a tab thing, and you can just go through it, and you can do anything you want, like theming-wise, on Budgie through their welcome screen, which is really nice to have. Same with like Mate, that is a really another good welcome screen that I enjoy. As far as cons, they just have... They don't have, in my opinion, a good implementation of Budgie. They have the panel on the top, and the theming that they start out with is just not to my liking. I mean, I know it's a personal preference as far as that goes, but you can move the panel to the bottom and all this stuff if you want. But I would, I would definitely do that myself. The theming in general over the whole thing was very inconsistent. There was times where it would be white when I wanted it dark, and times when it would be dark where I wanted it white. Not that I want it white, but if I changed the theme, it was just, I don't know if that had something to do with the driver or not, but I'm thinking not, because of the way Ubuntu GNOME handles their theming. Sometimes it's white in areas where it should be dark when you have it on dark mode. So I'm thinking, since it's a derivative of GNOME, then that's probably the reason for that. The Snap Store had the same issue, but I found out that the transparency was because of the driver, so that wasn't really an issue with it. So anyways, nice. Overall, I mean Budgie was pretty good. I mean, if you like a Mac kind of style straight out of the box, Budgie's pretty good for you.
Nice. And one thing that I'll note about both of those is the same thing that I noted about Plasma, that if for some reason you prefer the Ubuntu version of these desktop environments, that's Plasma, that's Budgie, and that's Cinnamon, that's perfectly fine. One of the things that I think just got me is that with Kubuntu at 5.19, I'm just never going to get 20 for 6 months. And it's going to be the same with Cinnamon and the same with Budgie as well. Cinnamon really lives in Linux Mint. And if you want the newest stuff, you got to be on Linux Mint to get it. And then Ubuntu Budgie is the same way. Solus is the caretaker mm-hmm. of Budgie originally. So if you want the newest stuff there, I mean, you know, for better or for worse, you got to be on Solus. So yeah, some of these desktop environments are really kind of made in their own little beaker. And you're going to be looking over that wall, man. And you're going to be like, oh, I want that feature, but you can't have it yet.
Yep.
All right. Well, it looks like it wraps it up for our distro talk this go around. So let's get into some feedback. We should be pretty quick. So it looks like we got two of them from John Wallace and one from Werewolf Chen. Cool. So John Wallace, we're going to have to put a pause, it looks like. So first email, he says, unfortunately, the hard drive on my Linux laptop has failed and the laptop is now off for repair. The only Linux usage I can currently get is via the Ubuntu app on my Windows 10 laptop. Hey, you know what? You're still using Linux, and I appreciate that. Anyway, so he goes on to say, from past experience, my laptop will come back with Windows 7 installed. Sounds like from the installers, or from the repair people. I would like to be able to set up the laptop as a dual boot Linux laptop with both Linux Mint and OpenSUSE installed. Would it be easier to partition the hard drive within Windows before carrying out the initial Linux installation? And does either of the two Linux distributions need to be installed first? I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks. So as far as the dual boot setup, I'm going to... Moss, you don't really traditionally boot with Windows as well, right? You're more of a multi-Linux.
If he wants a dual boot of Linux and Linux with no Windows, I would just use gparted for the partitioning. And it doesn't matter which you install first, although if you like the grub menu of one better than the other, you should install that distro
last.
So
with Windows installed, I actually would recommend, if you're in Windows 7... resize the Windows partition to the size that you want it to be in Windows. This way, you have disk management doing the heavy lifting, and it's Windows native, and it won't mess with your Windows stuff.
Okay, but what John Wallace said is he wants to set up the laptop as a dual boot Linux laptop with two Linux installations.
Oh, so I totally read that wrong then.
About Windows,
I thought he wanted
him
to keep Windows. Well, if he's not keeping Windows, then yeah, Moss, you're right. Yep, gparted, go for it. So he emailed in again and said, my wife has bought me a secondhand laptop for Christmas. Yeah. I will have to wait patiently until then to get my hands on it. That I intend to install Linux Mint on. Yeah, good man. I don't know the full details, but I'm aware that it has 4 gigs of RAM and 128 gig SSD and Windows 10 current. My old Acer laptop is back from the repairers. I intend to install OpenSUSE on it. So, cool. So it looks like he's just going to go with...
So now he's saying he's going to do a single boot on this
cool.
one and a
so,
single
well,
boot on the other one.
Cool. So, well, if you decide to go with dual boot, Moss has some good advice. I mean, this guy runs like 75 different distros on a single laptop on any given day.
At least.
Come on now. Be nice.
So, but yeah, that SSD is going to, it's going to fly. Even the slower SSDs, I've had, Kingston HyperX. I think it was like 300 megs read and write. But the thing still flew compared to some of the new SSDs that I've got now. So yeah, you're going to enjoy that one. It's going to be fast. Good stuff. So Joe, you got one here?
Yeah. Werewolf Chen sent us a message. Hi, I'm a blind user of Mint Mate. The accessibility is great, and I would like to say it to the maintainers of Mint Mate directly. Unfortunately, I don't find any mail addresses for them. Do you know how I can reach the maintainers by mail? Greetings, Wolfram from Germany. Now, I got responses from root at linuxmint.com, but that's for like main Linux Mint. So I'm not sure if that's the same guys as Mint Mate.
Oh, Clem handles that. So, I mean, if you email root at linuxmint.com, you're emailing Clem.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Mate's an official distro of Mint. It's one of the three that's on the website.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That email root.
Everything.
Yeah, we're not talking Ubuntu here where they have a different team for each desktop.
It's Clem and Co. the whole way down.
So, yeah, root at linuxmint.com will get you a response.
There it is. So, see, I told you we'd be fast. That was it for the feedback. So, let's head down to check this out. Am I the only one that put something in here? Well, that's fine. I will talk about it. So at the top of the show, at the top of last episode, technically, I had mentioned some spoopy NASA posters. They are fantastic little posters that that have that real 1940s, 1950s, 60s movie poster vibe to them. One is the Cosmic Web Presents Dark Matter. And it's got this cool spider on the top. And it's, I mean, this is a representation of like a galaxy or something. And then you've got Galactic Graveyard, which looks like some broken planets in front of a star like the sun, and then you've got gamma ray ghouls, looks like a exploding meteorite or something like that on these guys that are exploring what looks like to be another meteorite. But anyway, they're fantastic, and I would love, love, love to have these in true movie theater poster fashion so I can hang them up and stare at them all day long. Man, they are fantastic stuff. So yeah, thanks, NASA. You guys are awesome. So you won't be able to hear it because Owen is fantastic and he will take it all out. But down at the negative 72 dB, and to be honest, even if you don't take it out, it's probably going to be really hard to hear. You can hear, especially if you just add a bunch of compression without dealing with it, you're going to hear my fan. There is a fan. I told you I was on a new desktop this go around. And I was like, man, you know what? I don't want to spend 30, 40, 50 bucks. I did for a minute consider buying an all-in-one liquid cooler just for the fun of it. But that had been about 40, 50 bucks. And I was like, I don't really want to spend any more money on this thing. I put a $20 AX200 Wi-Fi card in it. The thing is fantastic. Really good signal back here. I was like, I don't want to dump a whole lot more money into it. And right now there's a coupon for this particular fan heatsink combo. Rosewill 92mm fan heatsink thing. Looks like it's all toolless install. So you just press them in with your thumbs. I don't know how good that's going to go. If my heatsink pops off in the middle of one of these shows, I'm going to be really upset. But for looks like 14 bucks with a $2.50 off coupon right now. So 12 bucks shipped, which is kind of nice. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm looking at that heatsink, going to install it so I can get rid of this really annoying fan hum. I'll probably buy that over the next week. Super cheap. If it does what it says that it does on the tin, which is it's quiet and it keeps my CPU cool, I'm happy. It does not have to look nice. I'm not going to be looking at it. So, you know, whatever. If it does its job properly and it's quiet, I'll be happy. Well, that's it for Check This Out. So our announcement, our next episode will be Sunday, November 15th, 2020 at 2 p.m. U.S. Central Time. Check the link. Check the link. There will be a link in the show notes and on the website for the next episode of Mintcast. So see you in 2 weeks. But I want to give everybody the opportunity to shout out where they're going to be between now and the next episode. Joe, where can we find you?
Well, you can catch me on the other podcasts that I'm on.
Can you catch you outside?
Maybe. I'm on...
Well, how about that?
I'm on the Linux Link Tech Show, which you can find at www.tllts.org. I'm on the Linux Lugcast, www.linuxlugcast.com. You can find me on MeWe, or you can send me an email directly, jb@mintcast.org.
And Bo, what about you? Can we catch you outside?
You can catch me on YouTube. I have lots of podcast content posted at Undercast Collective. We've got a link to it in the show notes. But I'm going to be doing some Star Trek RPG playthroughs up there pretty soon. We're recording the first one tonight. And hopefully that'll go well. That'll be there too. So if you're a Star Trek fan, then check that out. I did get some new subscribers since we mentioned it last time, and I can tell that they came from Mintcast because they all have something Linux related in either their name or their profile picture. So I can tell hey, that some people are coming over.
Put the link to that. If you're going to do it live, put a link to that in the Check This Out. That way we'll have it there, and we'll spread it around Telegram, Discord, and all that stuff too.
Cool. Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
And Moss, you?
Well, you can find me at Peaceful Hippo. It's Moss, the website. I have not been getting much support for that, so it might just go on being a bad joke. I'm on MeWe, blogs on Peaceful Hippo, LinuxQuestions.org, and Dreamwidth, music on Bandcamp, my YouTube channel, Robert Warren's YouTube channel. You can email Moss at mintcast.org, distrohoppersdigest@gmail.com, and I have a sponsor, still have the same $3 a month sponsor, so I'm happy. I'd be happier if there were more.
Anton Hughes.
Hi, you can get me on hackerpublicradio.org. I'm host ID 338. My very old blog that's not been updated forever is https at tony-hughes.blogspot.com. I'm on Twitter, tonyh1212, th at mintcast.org, and distrohoppersdigest@gmail.com.
Nice. Tony Watts.
You can email me at tw@mintcast.org, and you can check out the band Echoes of Savages on all the places on the internet. Think the genre of hard rock and 90s style rock. If you like that kind of music, catch me there. If you don't like that kind of music, I guess catch me outside.
Oh, okay. That was just way better than anything I said before. Oh, fantastic. Nice capitalization. And Josh, what about you?
You can find me at joshontech@protonmail.com. Email me there. At joshontech on Twitter and pretty much every other social site that you can think of.
Oh my God, Josh, I totally just figured it out. I realized you don't have a mintcast.org email. Whoops. Yeah, well, I will rectify that situation.
I was waiting. I wasn't pushing anybody.
Oh man, no. I am the most forgetful
just
dude
waiting
in the world.
Outside.
Nope. Yeah. He's trying to
You're
cash
just
me
being
outside,
too nice,
man.
Josh.
Dang. Okay.
He's trying to catch you inside on your time.
Anyway, so if I forget anything else, please just blurt it out into my face. It will be way quicker. It will be rectified quicker that way. But for me, leochavez.org and at leochavez on Twitter. And you can email me at leo@mintcast.org. I also do linuxuserspace.show. Check that out if you'd like. Or Full Circle Weekly News every week. But before we leave, we want to make sure to acknowledge some of the people who make Mintcast possible. Owen Peary for our audio editing, Josh Lowe for all his work on the website, Hobstar for our logo, and Londoner for our time sync. Bitemark Hosting for hosting Mintcast.org and our mumble server, Archive.org for hosting our audio files, HPR for our backup mumble room, and the Linux Mint development team for the fine distro we love to talk about every fortnight. Thanks, Clem.
Thanks, Clem.
Thanks, Clem.
And Cole.
Thanks, Clem.
This has been another episode of the Mintcast podcast. The show notes for this episode are at mintcast.org. You can send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. You can find more information about Linux Mint at www.linuxmint.com. You can follow both Mintcast and Linux Mint on Twitter, @Mintcast and @Linux_Mint. Thanks to Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com for our theme music, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Mintcast.
See, we got some traffic that time. This is a good run.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. Darn it, guys. No, never mind. I'm lying.
All right,
Tony.
Three, two, one,
zero.